434-1-790, the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Mr. Johnson?
Hi.
How are you?
I am good.
Okay. I just want a few moments to develop a point I want to make. That we had elections in Barbados a few weeks ago, right? And we had about 6 weeks' notice before the general election was called.
Mm-hmm.
The Honorable Ms. Motley, Mayor Motley, went to the IMF. We had the heads of government meeting. And I said all that to say, this is where people sat down and reasoned and came to a conclusion. What's the problem with the Anglican Church? That they can't get one of two people chosen to lead. That is salvation. That's just a question I'm putting out. I don't know if you can probably want
sir, I think it is unfortunate that something that should stand out as being a beacon of how you resolve issues has resulted in what it has resulted in. It has resulted, just as I mentioned about the drug bust, a drawing of line between the laity and the clergy, and one is supposed to be serving the other, and they're supposed to be a family. Families have disagreements from time to time, I am sure, but there is always a compromise or some point where you say, okay, here's what we can agree on and here's what we'll discuss further. This is a poor display of leadership and Christian understanding and unity. It is unfortunate. I think it is, in some cases, perhaps unnecessary. I don't know what's driving it, but there has to be something driving it.
Why can't they put, just like we do with the general elections, why can't they put a ballot box?
And let people buy
the Anglican churches.
Apparently, that's one suggestion, but I suppose they'll tell you they don't have laws to govern it. But you could change the laws if you want to.
Yeah, we have unions seeking re-election, and they do a similar thing. They put on ballot boxes at certain locations, as far as I remember. Mm-hmm. And you get a result.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to comment on that any further.
Mm-hmm. No, that seems to be one way to do it. The question is, do you have the will to change it, to take it that way, and will you abide by the result? But yeah, you should.
The other one is a suggestion to MTW. I called there last week with a suggestion, mm-hmm. and I don't know if it's going to go like anything else as hot here, but you go to MTW to get a transaction done,
mm-hmm.
and you're 28 people deep in the line, just use an example.
Right.
And when you get to the cashier, she says to you, excuse me, sir, but your cover note has the wrong date on it. I am suggesting that they should have a host or hostess on the floor.
To check.
And when, just checking.
Mm-hmm. To make sure everything is in order, yeah.
And if you have something that is missing, they will say, well, sir or madam, whatever. This is not complete. You need to get whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That will save you the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it will also speed up
the process,
the transaction there, because sometimes mm-hmm. you have to go across the yard
mm-hmm.
to another department to get a document signed or mm-hmm. to get something corrected to come back.
Yep.
I was there a few weeks ago and a guy had his daughter holding a position for him, and he went into, and this is not an exaggeration, he went in a close area close to the city, did a transaction and came back. And his daughter was still in line. Admittedly, she'd gone a little closer to the wicket, pay cashier.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the point that I'm making.
Yeah.
That if they do what I'm suggesting, if they do what I suggest, I think it will make more sense. I don't know if we want to comment on that.
I agree with you totally. It is. I have gone to renew road tax previously, before it was abolished, last year, as a matter of fact. And I brought my current cover note, and when I got to the top of the line, lady said to me, no, we need the last one too. Which meant I had to leave, come back to Starcom Network, get the old insurance policy and go back with it. So yeah, it takes up time. It wastes your personal time. And as you said, if you check, if you had somebody checking, It makes life a lot easier. It really does. Yeah. Yep.
You can refer to them as a host or hostess.
Whatever you get to call it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, once, you know, I mean, and let's be fair. What it does as well is it frees up the person at the desk from unnecessary rancor. If you get vexed and say, "Man, geez, I stay up here all morning, man. And I go and come back, man." Because sometimes tempers boil, you know, because that's human nature. And then the poor person go put up with that.
So I agree with you, sir. Because, I mean, sometimes these issues and suggestions fall on deaf ear, and I hope somebody up there is listening to me and would just try to at least what we can see if it works. And I know it will work.
Yeah. I am sure it can, sir. Well, good hearing you. Both of them were good points, and thanks for making them. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Dennis.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
I am good.
Okay. Dennis, it is strange that the caller before the last spoke and catch on the perimeter, basically, of what he really wanted to speak to you on this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And because I raise it in other quarters and I get lambasted. But like you, Dennis, I tell people all the time my back is broad and I can take all the blows that they want to bring. I will stay by, as Mr. P correctly said,
mm-hmm.
I will stay by my comments and my comments alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this whole, I know the matter is subjudicated before the court, so I would not venture into anything, but just want to make the point, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
This morning, because I hear a lot of talk about black people get whole and they don't get bail and the system this and the system the next and the system the third and all kind of things. I would like to believe that they're saying these things out of ignorance. Let me explain, Dennis. I know I can lost some friends this morning, but I want to explain it so that those persons who otherwise would like to know and understand will understand. Now, Joe Blow go across the sea, decide that he will get involved in illegal drugs, get intercepted by the Coast Guard, and he's brought for questioning, he's then charged and brought before the Magistrates Court. Now, because this talk about black people coming and don't get bailed is a farce in some instances. I'm not saying that it may not have occurred in the past, Dennis, but the problem is some people don't tell you all of the truth. They tell you half of the truth. Now, what plays a vital role, Dennis, in a person getting bail at the Magistrates Court level? Because bail is a right under the Constitution. The challenge is, Dennis, that a number of things are taken into consideration when an accused person is before the Magistrates Court charged in this manner, which is for drugs. One, the quantity of drugs is taken into consideration. If that person is a flight risk, is also taken into consideration. If that person is known, is on bail in other jurisdictions, that is the Magistrates Court, that is also taken into consideration. The antecedents of that person is also taken into consideration. So there are a number of things that might stand in the way of an individual receiving bail from the Magistrates Court's level. Now, if the bail has been denied, Dennis, the person, the accused person, once he has an attorney at law, can indicate to his attorney at law that he wants to have an urgent bail application filed at the Supreme Court level where he can have his matter heard for bail at the Supreme Court level. The challenge now, again, Dennis, is that urgent bail application calls for money. In a lot of circumstances, the same small black man that people are keeping a lot of noise about don't have the wherewithal to pay the attorney to have the urgent bail application filed. Therefore, if he don't have that in his turn down at the Magistrates Court level, Dennis, what do you think will happen? He will be remanded. You follow the line that I'm going on, right?
Yes, sir.
Good. So the point I'm making, Dennis, is that we cannot come out full-fledged and say that, you know, that because it is white and because it is black, that this body
so we will it. Say so because we could say so. You think it has anything to do with what you just described? It didn't have nothing to do with that, you know, sir. There was a gentleman by the name of Richard Christopher Haynes, doctor, he was then sir, now the late, right? Who said impressions sometimes matter more than the reality, right? And that's why I said, in the court of public opinion, nobody can win this one. All the legal explanations, sir, can go out the window because people are not making their comments based on any legal or rational thought. It is simply a matter of guts, if you want to call it that.
I'm happy that you say that. There is another thing that I'm going to raise with you. I was bold enough, probably a lot more bolder than you, only on Thursday, I think it was Friday morning, to make the point that white people have the same challenges as black people do. And then if I get cursed left, right, and center.
It's the office of social media. Sorry, that was what you call a wild swipe at the ball going past. That's all right.
But here's the irony. Now, after the temper flared and everybody started to calm down, I then because I heard about privilege, Dennis. The thing is that I have not said anything about privilege. I said challenges. Now, I made the point, Dennis, that a challenge and a privilege are two different things by definition and by name. They're two completely different things. And a challenge is that if a person who is of white color is disabled, that is a challenge. It does not remove him from having a privilege while having a challenge, but he has a challenge. So to say that a black person or a white person has the same challenges or similar challenges as each other in color is not a false statement. The problem is that everybody wants to take the conversation in the direction of privileges. And I have not discussed the issue of privilege because privilege is a right design or special for some people. I don't discuss privilege. Neither am I saying that racism don't exist. The point I was making in 30 Dennis was simply that all of us in this life have challenges regardless of our pigmentation. That's the point that I want to make. And the sooner that this color understands this and stop trying to settle the differences through emotions, Dennis, and understand. Because you see, this whole nonsense with reparations, that I don't buy into it, I don't believe in it, and I think that we should, as Martin Luther King said, hold our books by a bookstrap and move on. I made the comment, Dennis, that people are responsible, create their own challenges, and then seek to blame other people for the challenges that they're creating. They give me some examples of that too. But and one man telling me about slavery and colonialism, I said, Dennis, that they created their problem, not a problem that was created for them. The English language is one that people must understand and learn, and I keep saying to them that words have meanings. If something is said, you don't understand what is said, ask for clarification, or repeat in your mind what you're reading, process it properly before you rush to respond. That is the challenge. And I stand by it, Dennis. I think that we create our own problems. For instance, this morning, I can give you an example in closing. I drove behind a guy this morning who the better part of all of his taillights are extremely black, like a film come over the back of the taillights. So when he break, you can hardly see the red lights coming on. Now, that's an offense. When he stopped at the junction by the back of a police officer walked up to the car and asked him to step on. I saw he and the officer having a conversation as it relates to the lights in the back. Now, Dennis, you won't tell me that if he sought to have that done on his car, that he would not know that does not comply with the rules and regulations under the Road Traffic Act. But you know, when you get report, you will hear about that white man, the police didn't get reported. But we ain't going to get there because the problem is that try to remain within the confines so that you won't got to come and raise these issues and then believe that somebody penalizing you. I'm not saying there is that there are some people who innocently get caught up within the law. And there are some people deemed to be unfair based on how they were treated. I'm not saying that they are not cases such as those. The point I'm making, Dennis, is that if we create our own challenges, our own problems, we must accept our responsibility for the problems that we create and stop looking to blame black and white
So I want to tell you that despite all your well-meaning and well-reasoned presentations, you can't change what people feel. You can't change the prejudices they carry around. You can't change the weight of what they would like to carry and what they should put down. That's why when I started, I said, I understand the various societal rules and norms in various Caribbean countries because I've had to adjust to some of them. There are certain things that are culturally ingrained either through stories, personal stories, anecdotes, village culture, island culture. And it's not going to be changed by reasoning because it was not created by reasoning. That's my two cents. Less that. Brass Dax, good morning.
Good morning, Brother D.
How are you, sir?
Not as well as you.
You're in bad shape, call the Undertaker. Tell me.
Mr. Johnson, sir.
Sir.
There's a particular soca artist that 90% of the music that plays on the minivans and the minibuses, this artist makes. And the description of women and words that he uses. Only yesterday I heard two youngsters calling a word. I said, where did I get that from? I get that off the van going school. I said, you asked your mother why it was? I asked you, but she won't tell me. A man, Mr. Johnson, with his reputation, should desist all them CDs and things that he got with that type of music and this body, this and cussing and things. Should be withdrawn from the van.
Sir, how do you know it is that gentleman that you were referring to?
Mr. Johnson, will we know the gentleman's voice?
Sir, there are several people who try to sound like the gentleman. There are several people who do this. I wish we would not assume there is one person doing all of them. If there's one person in Barbados who's doing all of them, that person has to have, I don't know, some kind of great powers that I'm not sure that the person to whom you refer has.
But what I'm saying, though, Mr. Johnson, is that whoever is doing it then should desist from doing it. And the owners of these vans should make these people take these things out of their van. If they want a van to do it, put it in their own van. These things is ridiculous.
So I don't disagree with you. I have stood up in the car park at the back of Starcom Network on a Sunday. And I have heard music being played across in the van stand, clearly from where I am, and persons shouting obscenities over the music that was being played. And I know it wasn't recorded. The obscenities that were being shouted live. So the problem is more widespread than the vans. I keep telling people, when we talk about ZR culture, I may be wrong on this, and I am always willing to admit when I'm wrong, I take the blame. And sometimes I say I'm happy being wrong. And sometimes I say, okay, I will change my opinion. The vans are a reflection of a wider culture. And you could ask which came first, the chicken or the egg. And I will go along with whatever you decide on that. And I'll leave you there. But let me say this. The business about the van is not only the music, you know. It is what drives the people to the fets, the clothes they wear, the tattoos, the piercings, the places they lime, the alcohol or other drinks they consume. It is all micromanaged or processed. The vans are the veins that carry those tentacles out to the people. So when you go to the fets, you hear the same thing being played and the DJ live using the same cuss words, obscenities, all you big so-and-so ladies come forward now, all you who not wearing underwear, lift it up now, and so on. If that happens in the FET, the van is the conduit. So when you hear it on the van, it's a replication of what's happening out in the FETs. You get me? So if the person is making money by performing at a fete and saying it, and then making money, putting it on the tape to be played in the van to promote the fete, and the clothes are being sold to match what's being said in the song, to match what's being done in the fete, you understand how the money flows?
Mm-hmm.
You can't get rid of one by itself, Skipper.
I was in a van yesterday, a Bashar van coming up, and Mr. Marshall, you know Marshall, the historian?
Yes.
He was sitting in front of me. And the music that was playing, and the way the guy had it beating the thing, I said, well, you know the owner of this van? I can talk to the owner of this van. This is not good enough.
And the owner said?
My boss said, electrician in the van.
And the owner said?
No, I
were you telling me yet?
Well, Mr. Marshall.
Uh-huh.
Historian Marshall, I can speak to the owner, because I know the owner of this van. And this van never was that type of van.
Well, perhaps that's the way they make money. You ever thought of that?
You can make money better than that, Mr. Johnson.
There's a fellow that used to work the Bushall route that says, I think he's selling fruit now, according to the newspaper.
Ernest, people
didn't use the catchy van because he used to do that and stop Ernest. All over the place. I know the gentleman, so I just didn't want to call his name.
No. Yeah. Sunday morning, I got in the van, Bushall van again, going over Poplar. And when I got out of the van, I said, excuse me, sir. If you just drive this way all the time, I will drive you till I die. The van number was 152. I told the guy, so I said, if you just drive this way all the time, I will drive you till I die. That van yesterday, I ain't getting back in that. I would never get back in that van.
Fair enough, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. This is Down to Brass Tacks. The WhatsApp and the message on the on the chat says as well, the difference is that the van is a public service vehicle. People have to use public transport. They don't have to go to the vets. Yeah, but the vans are the advertising for the vets. The flyers on the poles showing the scantily clad girls and some of the same dirty words that the gentleman was commenting on are also there. We used to advertise skin out competitions. And people used to be skinning out on the posters. They used to be posted on the poles outside the Starcom. Used to have them regularly. So I used to see them there from time to time. It's marketing. That's what it is. The same way the transport board have, you know, billboards on the side. The vans can have billboards on the side. So the billboard inside on the radio, on the, well, whatever system they're using. And don't believe for one second, right? That some of those notices, some of those posters, some of the music is not being financed by people who profit in from it one way or other. That's the way I can put it without sticking my foot too far down my throat. Flashing lights. Flashing traffic lights. According to the those responsible, flashing is a mode. So that flashing lights don't mean that they're not working. There are cases where sometimes they are not working, but from simply looking at it, John Public can't tell. But that's what I'm told, that flashing is a mode. There are several lights that are in flashing mode at the moment. I don't know if it's because school's on vacation. I don't know if somebody's trying a traffic plan, or I don't know if there's some major study underway, or if there's a problem with the lights. I have not received an answer on that. What I was told was that flashing is a mode. I would urge you to be cautious and to understand what flashing red means and what flashing amber means. And if you don't remember because it's been a long time since you did your regulation exam, call a driving instructor and ask, or a police officer. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello. Hi, Dennis. Morning. How are you?
I am not bad. And you?
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. You made a comment about steel bands earlier in some of your opening remarks, and I forget the context in which you spoke.
I was talking about advertising and the companies that support culture in general. That's where I was going.
You didn't mean to call. Yeah, good. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am speaking as someone who has had a few years' experience with steel bands and steel band development in Barbados. And I want to contextualize this issue and pay close attention to this very peculiar social animal called Barbados. Now, steel orchestras and steel bands in the Trinidad and Tobago's, in the Grenada, St. Vincent, Antigua, are very different from anything that we could have developed here over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the how they were spawned in these countries, they are spawned from the very bowels of the village from which they emerged. Right, so you get generational involvement in these orchestras,
agreed,
where children from the district, from the area, when they finish their homework at evening, they disappear from their homes. Mm-hmm. And the parents know that they are looked after by the adults, that by the second parent, who are the young adults and the older adults in the panyard. They can't get up to mischief, and they learn their pan, and they come up through the ranks. And then you have that attrition taken care of, where these youngsters will hone their skills on the pan of their choice, and then phase two will always have more than enough members, or start exodus. Invaders,
thank you very much. I was waiting on you to get around to them. Let me just say this quickly before you move on. During Pan Fusion at Ilara Court, I had an opportunity to talk to the visiting Pan men from Trinidad. All of them stated that they started by age 5. All of them said their parents took them to the Pan Yard. All of them have music degrees. Move on, sir.
I rest my case. That particular aspect. Now, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Steel orchestra or steel bands or steel band music in Barbados has but a very small art of following. And this following is largely the middle class Barbadian who has had the opportunity to travel and come back. But how they've been Trinidad, then all these big bits of faith, Panyad, and they come back with this and they follow and they will actually follow steel band music, local steel band music, but it's a small minority of the population. But they've had exposure to how steel bands integrate in the cultural festivities of Trinidad and Antigua and Grenada, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But these same individuals, and I'm not going to exclude myself from this,
mm-hmm,
and with our limited space and our limited resources, you can't bring a steel band around where they live and practice it on.
Noise.
And they're unaccustomed to it. Mm-hmm. However, you manage to get a few tunes eked out, and they will come and listen to you and applaud politely. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the rub. Our authorities have got to do, and I know that the Minister of Culture is going to take the suggestion on board. I've already spoken to him, and he seems very keen. I know he's interested and open-minded. We have got to take on board the responsibility for the development,
yep,
of this. And once a year, exposure in a little pop over like a pan from the stand. And this is another thing I want to talk about. As far as I'm concerned, it started as being pan from the stand. It's a Barbadian colloquial. Pan from the stand. PANPUNDESAN.
Right.
It's Barbadian. It is our thing. That's where it is. The pan on the stand, not a pan from the stand. That's we want.
I agree.
Okay, good. Moving on. So, we got.
I back
got
you on that.
And we got. Right, and we got the little pan fusion and so on, and then we got the little pan boys getting a little something during Popover Festival, and it's virtually forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Our authorities need to understand that pan development in Barbados cannot be, and will never be, and can never be equated to the pan development in the other territories simply by the way by how they were born and how they were developed. It can't be. So we have to be on a different track. And while we get a lot of people contributing steel pans, steel art, and instruments in schools, we have to take it from there. Even in the school setting, you cannot have a steel pan developed by having six or eight or nine bass pans stashed in a corner and expect that when they have a practice, that some kid is going to lug six or seven pans over to some remote area to practice for 2 hours and then lug them back. They ain't doing it. They're not doing it. So I'm saying that if you really want pan development, you have to bite the bullet. And in select areas, maybe of schools, it has to be isolated because it is noisy. Let's face it, Dennis, it is noisy.
Mm-hmm.
But you need the noise. And you need protection for these children from that noise too. You can't just have them playing and beating up pans without your protection. But that the only way it can actually develop. And from there, we can actually see the progression. People become interested, people start to do the music degrees, etc. Mm-hmm. Barbados has arguably one of the best tenor panics in the Caribbean. David Diggy Walker is arguably one of the best tenor panics in the Caribbean. And I didn't make no bones about saying it. And his talent is all natural. And he's done his degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that we can open a lot more doors and a lot more opportunities if we actually understand that the development is very different from everybody else's and actually treat it differently.
Yeah.
Many years ago, under a different CEO at the NCF, many years ago, who was interested, we had something that our office pushed for called a Panyard Line.
Yep.
Panyard Line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the CEO was extremely interested, and we actually had to beg him to give us the yard of the NCF.
In the NCF to use it.
This,
yeah.
To use it. Just it cost you nothing. Mm-hmm. We had the session in between, like right around now, where mm-hmm. there's a lull between semifinals and finals.
Finals, yeah.
Not too much break, right. So we gathered, we got the crowd together. We had about maybe eight bands playing at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was phenomenal.
Yep, it was.
Because the parents and the friends of the musicians are
going to come. They're going to come.
And still depending with a couple of people.
Yeah.
He actually attended and was blown away. And he said, you know, this has to be a fixture on our crossover calendar. But then let me segue now to sponsorship. Our orchestra got sponsorship. And we fought and received a sponsorship. For 1 year, Dennis. For 1 year. So then we crafted a 10-year development plan and presented
they said
the CEO
no.
of the company. The CEO said, I'm sorry, but we got orders from on high that we have to pull the sponsorship. I said, but what the hell? Because our corporations in Barbados do not have a culture of sponsorship, and particularly for cultural events.
Yeah.
So they only do it when it's beneficial to them, when they can see immediate returns by at sales of their product at a particular event. But you've got to understand, sponsorship is a major investment.
Mm-hmm.
In your cultural development, in the development of the country, and you've got to put aside the money to do it. So basically, it just petered out, and we left the own devices, and people just, roll over, play dead, and nothing becomes of it. So all I'm saying is that if we seek to extract ourselves away from what we believe should be, and start dealing with the reality of what is, we can develop steel bands in Barbados and have them participate really. Even more integrally in the Performance Festival and other festivals.
So we had something.
So
hold on, just before you go, I want to just leave this with you. We did actually have a competition some years ago called Pangalang, and that was changed. I didn't like the name, but that's what it was called.
Yeah, but coming to that, you know
mm-hmm.
why we're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because a very, very, very ardent steel panist,
mm-hmm.
and I'll call his name Roger Gibbs, whom mm-hmm. I have a lot of time for,
mm-hmm.
said, you know, who said, you know, they're really making sport at me, you know. Because Pangalang sound, let's just drop a soft.
That's what I tell you. I didn't like the name, yeah. I know.
You can't call steel band with Pangalang. So, you're making sport at these things.
Exactly.
So unless you stop making sport at it, I start treating it seriously like the real musical instrument, the only one developed in the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
the real musical instrument that it is, we'll all be doomed to failure. So.